Hello, and welcome to Season 2 of Walking Without Rhythm. I'm Jeremy.
Marcel.
And we're going to talk about the first Brian Herbert and Kevin J. Anderson book, Dune House Atreides.
Well, you have a physical copy of that thing, a hardcover, no less.
I have every Dune book other than Princess of Dune in hardcover.
That's excessive.
I'm a collector, so
yeah,
and it's book club size.
Yep, looks good. It looks like you didn't even crack it open.
I listened to the audiobook, so
that's because
this audiobook is pretty good. So
yeah,
Marcel, you know, people wanted a Dune 7, and they never got it because Frank Herbert passed before that could be. But for a long time, a lot of authors would reach out to Brian Herbert, according to Brian Herbert. And they wanted a sequel to Dune, and they wanted to work with him. And he picks, out of everyone, Kevin J. Anderson. But rather than do a sequel to Dune, they were initially going to do the Butlerian Jihad, which they would end up doing. But that also got put on hold in favor of doing a trilogy of Dune prequels, setting up the events of the original novel. And this book's kind of interesting with that. I think this is the closest we've ever gotten to the original tone of Dune.
Yeah.
But Marcel, what happens in this book?
All right, I'm going to try my best to recap this. It's a pretty long book, actually. I think it's almost like 700 pages long. As I recall, it takes place something like 35 years before the events of the original Dune novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's broken down generally into three basic plot lines. The first plot line follows Duke, or at this point he's not Duke, but Leto Atreides. And he is he's like a 15-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The second plot line generally follows Vladimir Harkonnen, who is the Baron that we know and hate in the original Dune series, and his dealings with the Bene Gesserit. Mm-hmm. And then the third plot line takes place. It's sort of like, well, I guess there's actually four now that I think of it. But so the third one is Pardo Kynes, who is a planetologist, imperial planetologist, who is sent to Arrakis, Dune, to study, the topography and the Fremen and report back to the throne. And then the fourth plot line is Shaddam, who later becomes the emperor of the known universe, Shaddam the Fourth, replacing his father, whose name escapes me. I don't know if you remember his father's name.
I know what the concubine called him, Rudy.
Rudy, yeah, it's Elrud. Elrud, thank you.
Elrud the Ninth.
Elrud the Ninth, yeah. So the main plot line, however, is following Leto Atreides, and essentially he gets sent to Ix. To visit a friend of his father's, Duke Vernius, and stay with Duke Vernius's family.
And learn from the Ixians. And then next year, the Ixian House Vernius's oldest son's going to go to Caladan and learn there.
Like a royal exchange, kind of like, hey, you know, you young royal, go live with mm-hmm. with this other royal household and learn from them. And Ix is well known for it's a very technologically advanced planet, right? Almost like, so there's this rule in the Dune universe that man shall not make a machine in the likeness of man.
Yeah.
Because of the events. Machines. Yeah. The thinking machines. Yeah. Because
of the Butlerian Jihad.
That's right. So, I think it's generally considered by non-Ixians that Ix kind of skirts that law. And there are these group called the Bene Tlelax, and they are religious fanatics. They really uphold the mm-hmm. the tenets of the of the Butlerian Jihad, right?
Although they do make the Golas.
Right. Yeah, they make Golas, which are clones that
they're clones from dead tissue that maintain the dead person's yeah. memories.
Yeah.
Hence why we've had Duncan Idaho in every Frank Herbert book.
That's right. He just keeps going back. And Duncan Idaho is in this book too. But
yeah, he has a small plot.
Yes, he does. He's a kid in this book. But essentially what happens is, so Leto gets sent to Ix, and while he's on Ix, it is invaded by a joint force of Sardaukar from the Imperial throne, yeah, and the Bene Tleilax. And this was done with the blessing of Crown Prince Shaddam the Fourth, who later becomes the emperor, replacing his father, and sort of at the manipulation of his best friend Hasimir Fenring, right? So Fenring's kind of pulling all the strings at this point and wants Shaddam to forge this unholy quote unquote alliance with the Tleilax. He gives them Ix, and in return they use the facilities on Ix to try and create synthetic spice.
Mm-hmm. Basically cutting the Harkonnens out of the picture, because the Harkonnens have control over Arrakis.
Right.
The Harkonnens find out about this through the Bene Gesserit.
Right.
Because the Bene Gesserit want Vladimir Harkonnen's DNA to make the Kwisatz Haderach, which we find out probably one of the dumbest parts of this book.
Yeah, definitely the cringiest for sure.
Reverend Mother Mohiam is Jessica's mother.
Yeah.
Which I knew Jessica was younger than Leto, but I didn't realize she was that much younger.
Yeah.
She's
15, 16 years younger than Leto at this point.
Yeah. Because I think she's born at the end of this book.
Yes. And Duncan Idaho essentially is a kid on Gaiety Prime, which is the Harkonnen homeworld. He manages to escape there after being hunted by Glossu Raban, who's Vladimir Harkonnen's nephew.
Ralph's older brother.
Yeah, older brother, yeah. He finds his way to Caladan and basically becomes a member of Duke Paulus Atreides' court. Paulus is killed at a bullfight, because that's his thing. He likes to do bullfights for his people, mm-hmm, kind of like bread and circuses. But he's killed during one, because there's this like mutant bull that basically he can't best and manages to kill him. And you later find out, I don't know that's ever explicitly stated, but Paulus's wife, Lady Helena, who's Duke Leto's mother, may have been, I think actually it's all but confirmed that she was the one who plotted to kill him.
Which you would think that would have been brought up in Dune.
Yes.
But it's not. I don't like that. Well, she's the worst character in this book, which is saying something, because we have the Harkonnens.
Yeah.
And they do some despicable things in this book, but she is just the most wretched creature.
Yeah.
She's like a weird evangelical from the Orange Catholic Bible. And because when House Vernius is overthrown, Paulus takes the Vernius children in.
That's right. They go back to Leto, and the Vernius children find their way back to Caladan, and he shelters them.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, it's God's will that you die.
Yeah, that's right.
So dumb. Also, the Kynes thing, the Kynes plot in this is kind of glossed over for like good chunks of the book.
Yeah, I said there were three main story streams, and there are. The third one is the Shaddam one. The Kynes plot is kind of a subplot of that. Mm-hmm. But basically, I thought the entire time, oh, this is Chani's father. And then I realize sort of like halfway through the book that it's actually her grandfather. So there's a second Kynes, his son. So Kynes, yeah, basically, Liet. Yeah, Liette Kynes is the one. I thought for some reason Pardo was the one who was in Dune. Anyway, yeah. I was totally off my like my timeline.
Yeah.
So Pardo basically, while he's in Arrakis, he sees some Harkonnens roughing up some young Fremen, and he steps in and basically helps the Fremen kill the Harkonnens. And at this point, I mean, like he's not really a fugitive because the Emperor doesn't necessarily know that he killed some Harkonnens, and neither do the Harkonnens really. But he goes native. He becomes one of the Fremen. They decide not to kill him. He's brought back to Siege Tabor, which is the siege that Paul later ends up in with Jessica in Dune. And he befriend one of the boys that he saved is Stilgar.
Yes.
Who's later prominent in the Dune books. And he goes native. He ends up after they decide not to kill him. He ends up marrying a Fremen woman, and yeah, they eventually give birth. She gives birth
Stilgar's to Stilgar's sister.
Stilgar's sister. That's right. Everybody's related.
Yeah, which I think that was a Frank Herbert thing.
Yeah.
That Stilgar's like a great uncle.
Well, this book was apparently based off of Frank Herbert's notes.
Let's talk about this.
Yeah.
Because it reeks of BS. The afterword by Brian Herbert where, we magically got a bunch of notes. They were in safety deposit boxes. Why would Frank Herbert put a bunch of his notes in safety deposit boxes and not tell his son?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know,
that's
but
like the most bizarre thing I have ever heard. This book tries to be Dune. In a lot of ways. I think that was them playing it safe.
Yeah. But
this book is a tell, don't show book. This book is dialogue, the book. Like more than any of Frank Herbert's books ever were. This is so much dialogue.
Yeah, I think that's a fair criticism. It is a lot of dialogue. It's a lot of plot, a lot of exposition.
I'm not saying all of the dialogue's bad. In fact, a lot of it's good dialogue.
I wasn't a big fan of the overuse of exclamation marks at certain points. I think I mentioned that. It was like the first thing I noticed when I started reading it. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I think generally this book, I went in not knowing what to expect and wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. It dragged at certain points because it's a very long book. Yeah. But
it's too long.
And the... Yeah. Oh.
Go
on. I was gonna say the plot is somewhat convoluted, like with the different plot threads. Yeah,
for no reason, because not a lot happens in this book. The big thing is the Twi'laxu, the nasty, awful Twi'laxu that everyone hates, take over Ick. They take Ix. Over yeah. Ix, and then the Harkonnens, just to be awful. Decide, we have the note chip. You remember that from Heretics of Dune? Oh, we have that now for some reason.
Yeah, why is it never really used before Heretic? Like, it's been around for thousands of years.
Yeah, or is this a precursor to the note chip? Well, it's a stealth ship. They have a stealth ship, and they blow up part of a Bene Twi'laxu ship and blame the Atreides.
Yeah. So and everybody,
cause an intergalactic incident.
Incident. That's right. They do. They cause it an international incident, but in space.
It's an intergalactic incident, and Leto, thinking on his feet, is like, "I want a trial by forfeiture."
Yeah,
and it basically becomes a court procedural.
That right near the end. They've all gathered because. Shaddam and Fenring have Rudy Elrude, the ninth
Rudy boy who was starting to go crazy. They just poisoned him over a period of two years. I think
it was like years. And
they can he starts to lose his mind, and like that's how they convince him to have the Twi'laxu invade Ix.
Yeah.
Because the the Duchess or whatever was his concubine, and then she ran away with the head of House Vernius.
Yeah, Duke Vernius's wife was his former concubine. Yeah, and he didn't even care about it. He threw her aside like years and years ago. But then the moment she shacks up with Duke Vernius, he's suddenly jealous. And how dare you take my concubine away from me? And so he's always kind of had it in for him. So it was an easy it was easy to kind of push him in that direction.
Yeah, but he finally dies. He just so many dumb things.
So wait, go back to the court procedural. So now that all the stage is set. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have the court procedural where Shaddam the Fourth wants Leto to live primarily because the Bene Gesserit want Leto to live because he's the next step for the Kwisatzotarak. And in fact, they're manipulating things to the point where they convince Shaddam that he needs to marry one of them.
Yes.
Specifically the head of the breeding program for the Kwisatzotarak.
Yes.
But like the Bene Twi'leks aren't going to take that. They get told that they can't kill Leto, and then they try anyway, which is probably the greatest first murder I've ever seen a character do, where he straight up threw a knife right into a Bene Twi'lek's throat after they were standing one on top of the other, because the Bene Twi'leks, they're like dwarfs. They're just kind of little elf people. And they were standing on the shoulders of another, and they were disguised as a guard, which was so ridiculous.
It's like, what, trench coat?
Yeah.
Say hello to my little friend.
It was like, you ever seen Total Recall when Arnold Schwarzenegger's disguised as like the woman?
Yeah.
That's how I envisioned it, but it's just two Bene, it's a Bene Twi'lek standing on another Bene Twi'lek.
I think of them as like Oompa Loompas, but like gray skinned instead of, like orange skinned. Because they're like these diminutive, kind of like top knotted, I don't know, weird looking dudes. They're human, but like not barely.
Oh, yeah. And they have teeny teeth.
Teeny teeth, yeah.
Yeah, that's something that like every book that has to deal with the Bene Twi'leks, that they always bring up the teeth. I don't know. They're not as bad as what were the cat people in Chapter House?
Oh, God, I forget their
names.
Those
nasty furries, or even worse, the chair dogs. The chair dogs are the creepiest things. Yeah, people. You want to have nightmares? Look
the
up
futar. The futar. The futar. Yeah.
I hate the futar. they gross me out. And I like cats, but I don't want to deal with cat men,
For sure. So Shaddam steps in and basically helps exonerate Leto.
Which is great, because the Bene Twi'leks bring in this horrible torture device to take all of his tissues away from him.
Yeah.
And they bring it to court, which is, I don't know if that was supposed to be a funny scene or like a scary scene. I thought it was pretty comedic because it's just so nonsensical.
So two like minor plot points that I think bear some discussion. So the first is, the guild navigator. There's two brothers. Ixians, and like one becomes a guild navigator, the other kind of flunks out, but he survives like the Ixian siege by the Twi'leks, and he goes underground and starts conversing with his brother. That plot line, I assume it's going to play out in other books, because it went absolutely nowhere. I don't even remember how it ended.
Yeah. Oh, they figure out how to talk through space.
Yeah. But then the guild navigators are like aware that his brother is talking to him.
Well, because they use that Shaddam talks to Leto through
space. Okay.
That's where that goes. There's probably going to do more with it.
Okay,
I think
we'll see.
He's going to end up with what's her face, the House Vernius's daughter,
Hylia.
Yeah. Because it's not that, or they're going to kill her.
Yes, like, right. That's right. Because he was like, he loved her or something like that. He was, yeah, he had the hots for her. Yeah.
Yeah. And Leto has a thing for her, and they clearly can't do that.
Well, his future wife is like a baby at this point. So,
well, concubine. They never married.
That's right. Concubine.
Yeah.
The other plot point that I thought was worth discussing. So, speaking of the concubine, Jessica, the way she's born, it's so Gaius Helen Mohiam basically blackmails Vladimir Harkonnen to sleeping with her. Says, like, we know all about these spice stores that you have on Arrakis. You've been sifting from the top, kind of like,
yep,
stealing from the spice that's supposed to go to the Empire, and you've been taking some of it and stockpiling it for yourself, and we're going to reveal that to the Emperor unless you sleep with me, which is like just the weirdest thing ever. But anyways, he agrees.
I think it's in character, though.
Yeah, it is in character.
It's in character.
Yeah, he agrees, even though he's into men, or boys rather. He agrees, and he sleeps with her, and she gives birth to basically like an abomination child, and then she has to go back and blackmail him into sleeping with her a second time. And I was like, what was the point of doing it a second time? Like, narratively speaking, what was the point of that?
So, like, here's how it plays out in Dune. Because Paul finds out that Jessica's father was Harkonnen when he has the change. He learns that it was like Vladimir Harkonnen experimented once with women. And that woman turned out to be a Bene Gesserit. Okay, like, that's believable. What's so ridiculous is that because he has to sleep with her again, he drugs her and assaults her.
Yeah, sexually assaults her.
Yeah, which is horrific. And then she gives him a disease that will make him a fat person.
Yes, that is how he becomes so fat. Yeah.
Dumb that I was listening to this and welding. I stopped welding and I texted Marcel. I'm like,
you did.
And we happened to be at the same point in the book. And I'm like, what is this?
That was my least favorite part of this book. That
I gave up on this book, read two other books, and then went back to it.
That's right. We would have had this podcast done months ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just like, really? And then we have his nephew, who basically acts like Fae Ralpha, but we can't have Fae Ralpha in the story because he's Paul's age.
I was wondering about that age differential between Ralpha and Raban, because like Raban at this in this book, he seems like
he's older than Leto.
Yeah, he seems like he's in his like 20s or 30s.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways,
he's stupid too.
He is stupid, yeah.
He's evil and stupid.
That characterization I was fine with. I thought they
named his
character. Yeah.
Yeah, because Fae Ralph is a little smarter than Raban.
Yeah.
Which is it's nice. But it's so clear that they wanted Fae Ralph, and then they realized they couldn't do that. Yeah. So we have dumber Fae Ralph, which I don't care for so much. It's whatever. Piter's in this, and I always like Piter DeVries
and Thufir Hawat. Yeah
they're both in here,
the two mentats.
I think Gurney Halleck's mentioned, but not in this.
He's not in it for sure, but he might be. Yeah, I think he might have been mentioned. And we have, of course, Duncan Idaho as a kid and becomes part of Paul's court. Paulus's court. And then later, when Leto takes over, he becomes part of his court as well.
I have a feeling, I have a prediction. In the third book of this trilogy, House Carino, we're going to have Duncan Idaho fight Raban.
I think that's like the equivalent of having like Obi-Wan fight Vader in the like Disney show, like having him fight Vader before the scene in A New Hope.
Yeah.
Because
Raban's clearly not in Dune.
Right. Have you seen the Dune movie, the second one?
No.
Okay.
I rewatched the first one and didn't care for it on second viewing.
So I almost wish I hadn't seen it before this. And I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. Because they have Christopher Walken playing Shaddam the Fourth in the second movie. And the entire time I was reading this book, I tried so hard. I couldn't stop myself. I kept imagining like a young Christopher Walken, which is like really bad because I've said this before, but like, I think he's the most miscast character in that film. Mm-hmm. He's like, he's just like this old, like galactic emperor. And he has like a Brooklyn accent. He's like, Muad'Dib, tell me about the ways of the Fremen.
And that's funny. I don't know whoever they cast as Fey Ralpha, horrible casting. The guy who played Austin Elvis. Butler.
Yeah.
Oh, he's terrible. He's terrible in everything. That hot take.
I thought it was all right. I thought he did good in that role. I thought he did. You should see.
I hate that the Harkonnens all have no eyebrows and are
and they're bald. Yeah, I don't like that aesthetic style either.
Character. I don't know. I didn't like the when I rewatched the first part.
Yeah.
Like I didn't like a lot of it.
What did you think about Shaddam in this book? Because I thought he was kind of like
dumb,
simpering. Yeah, dumb, weak.
Until the end.
Right.
I honestly, their plot line was probably my favorite plot line.
The court intrigue stuff?
The court intrigue stuff, because they're just all so awful and evil. And they're just like backstabbing everyone. I thought that was more enjoyable. Because the Leto stuff, I thought, was very weak. Because, like, we know Leto's going to survive.
Yeah.
I can see they're going to kill Paulus immediately. First of all, this book, I don't know how they're going to get another two books out of this. Like, I'm real worried, because nothing
covers a lot of ground, yeah.
Because not only that, we have another trilogy, if we're reading chronologically. We have the Caladan. What on earth are they going to talk about? Like, are we a bit? Like, what's going to happen?
I don't know. I mean, okay, well, actually, let's talk about that real briefly. Like, I wanted to talk about why they set this sort of 35 years in the past. And I know we've talked a bit about that off stream, this idea that like, was that the right call? Like, did we, I guess it goes back to that old question of an expanded universe generally as a concept. Like, did we need, or did we need to know what these characters were doing 35 years before Dune? Cause I feel like Dune does such a great and adequate job of just putting you right into the middle of the action, that like this story, while I think narratively constructed wasn't bad, just doesn't really, for me, it doesn't really expand the universe as much as I wanted it to.
The only thing it expands is the navigators. And even then it doesn't do a lot of that.
Right.
Cause that's like the one thing, my one complaint with Frank Herbert stuff is the navigators are just there until we get to Heretics and they aren't needed anymore.
Yeah, very mysterious, very inscrutable. I would love to know more about them, especially like their aesthetic in the old Dune movie, the 1984 one. It's so cool. They're like,
oh, yeah. That was his vision.
Yeah.
That was Frank Herbert's vision for the navigators.
Yeah.
I know there is a Navigators of Dune book.
Yes.
But honestly, I think this was written to make money, if anyone cared, because it has noticeable characters you'll remember from the first book.
Yeah.
And tonally, it tries to stay with the first book quite a bit.
Yeah. I think it was well written. I think narratively speaking, I thought it was a little convoluted, but I thought like the prose was not bad at all. There was just too much of it.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah,
it's not like a lot of the modern stuff I read on the channel.
Yeah,
there was no one's it wasn't like everyone's race was mentioned at the beginning of a sentence. It wasn't, there were pronouns weren't thrown around. You
well,
know?
It was written in 1999. So, I mean, we'll have to see if those newer Dune books do anything like that.
Hell yeah.
But I, you know, I thought it was better than I thought it would be. But well, the one thing it was missing for me, the one thing that was like quintessentially Frank Herbert, mm-hmm. is this philosophical discussion or dialogue that sort of weaves throughout the books of mm-hmm. what does it mean to be human? And I just,
yeah. All of Frank Herbert's books, Dune is the hero's journey.
Yeah.
Dune Messiah is never trust a charismatic leader.
Yeah.
Children of Dune is an extension of that, which is what it's like to be idolized and like a legend being created.
Yeah.
God Emperor is just like what happens when someone lives forever.
Yeah.
And it's just, that's just philosophy on humanity and all of its quirks and stuff. And then Heretics and Chapter House are about how sex controls people. That's like the big thing of that Frank Herbert was doing with that.
Yeah.
This is a pulp book.
By comparison. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way. But it is very pulpy. It's very tell not show, and it lacks the philosophical substance.
Yes, if it was like 250 pages shorter, mm-hmm. I think it would be like a decent, you know, like, oh yeah, it kept my attention the entire time.
Mm-hmm. This is long-winded for Kevin J. Anderson, because his Jedi Academy books are very straight to the point.
Yeah, those are books you can like blast through in a day or two if you really set your mind to it. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I'm used to. So here's the real thing. Who's doing most of the writing here?
I could not tell. I imagine Kevin, though.
I'm thinking that he's weaving it together.
You think
I'm a little frightened to read anything Brian Herbert writes.
We might have to, just for comparison's sake.
I might, yeah. But like, it feels like nepotism a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some power in that name, right? Like he's Frank Herbert's son. It really, I think what it boils down to is, do you want to know more about the Dune universe? And then the second question is, do these books deliver on more of the Dune universe? And like, I agree with you. I think in regards to the Guild Navigators, we do learn more. I think we learned a bit more about Ix, or at least what it was like before. But beyond that, sort of everybody's going through the motions to get to where they need to be by Dune. It felt like. Yeah,
it feels like the Phantom Menace.
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's a.
And if you look at this in Kevin J. Anderson's career timeline, he's getting out of Star Wars at this point. He's moving towards Dune because he didn't come back for New Jedi Order.
Right.
He did some comic stuff and a short story for the Star Wars Gamer and was done.
It came out the same year as The Phantom Menace.
Yep. It came out the same year. Also, when did Saga of the Seven Sons happen? Because that was his pitch to Lucasfilm for New Jedi Order.
I'm looking it up. Novel series. It published between 2002 and 2008.
Okay.
So around the time that NJO would have come out, like at least the concept would have been.
Well, Vector Prime came out in 99.
Oh, okay. Never mind. Sorry.
Yeah. Vector Prime was either 99 or 2000. It was when Del Rey took over for Star Wars.
Yeah. Okay. Did you know that there's a 12 book comic adaptation of House Atreides?
Yeah, it came out a few years ago. They're on House Carino now.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. I haven't read the comic adaptation. I'm kind of motivated to just to kind of
Jay, see what Jay yeah. Lee does the art, and I'm not the biggest fan of his stuff.
Yeah, me neither.
It's good. He did the Dark Tower stuff early on.
Yeah.
And that was perfect for that. But like, I read his Batman Superman stuff for New 52, and it didn't fit.
Yeah. One thing I did like about this book, House Atreides, that the other Dune books did, is, you know, like at the beginning of every chapter, there's like a little like in-universe snippet or paragraph or something like that, or like a poem. Yeah, the
quote from
quote, but like yeah. in-universe. I like that. I like that literary affectation. I think more books should do stuff like that.
I'm glad that stayed.
Yeah.
Because that's been a thing since the original Dune.
Yeah.
Although most of those ones in that first book are Irulan. It's the only thing Irulan does in the first book.
That's right. Yeah. She's the narrator, right? So.
Yeah.
In the movie, at the very least.
In the book, too.
In the book?
Was she's the chronicler of Muad'Dib.
Oh, that's right. She writes the history of that's right.
That is her function as his wife. She's just his chronicler because he won't. That's like the whole problem in Dune Messiah is he won't sleep with her.
Yeah, well, she has nothing else to do, I guess. Then
and that's screen. Why she initially conspires to get him killed, and then regrets it, which is the dumbest writing of Frank Herbert's career. I never understood that suddenly she regrets her decision once the babies are born.
I guess she finally came around to him. I don't know, because she was in Children of Dune as well, right? Like she was pretty instrumental. She was like their guardian essentially.
Yeah, because Ilea's insane.
That's right. Yeah,
she's like trying to keep the balance of things in there. I always felt bad for Irulan, like when it came to children of Dune, because honestly, I think she's the only one that cared about those kids.
Yeah, that's the impression that I got too.
But the kids didn't care about her. No one cared about poor Irulan.
All those kids were like superhumans, right?
They were like thousands of years old, trapped in 9-year-old bodies.
Yeah,
it's so bizarre, and it works.
It does work. What did you think about the characterizations in House Atreides? Like, I thought the Harkonnens were pretty well characterized.
Everyone's well characterized from the books, from the previous Frank Herbert stuff. I mean, Stilgar doesn't get a lot of time, and Duncan Idaho's kind of mature for his age, but they justify it, so it works. I didn't like what's his face, Shaddam's friend
Fenring,
still doing the
yeah, he has that speech impediment where he kind of sounds out words.
Well, in Dune, they make it sound like it's his own language. And he actually gets introduced to the Bene Gesserit who becomes his wife. And father's Fae Ralpha's daughter, which never goes anywhere in Frank Herbert's books.
That's right. I remember that.
But is the plotline of Paul of Dune. So.
At least they tied up that plot hole.
The Heroes of Dune trilogy that they only just finished, even though they wrote those first two books in the 2000s, and then they just wrote the third one last year.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it makes sense to go back into the far past if you want to expand the Dune universe and do something, you know, 10,000 years in the past, talking about the Butlerian Jihad. And we can talk about those books when we get to them and how good they are and if they actually do a good job of that. But that like conceptually makes sense to me. But to do something 35 years in the past, I mean, I'm going to sound like a hypocrite because I love the Star Wars expanded universe and they do like something like every year. But I don't know. It seemed like way too soon.
If you're going to do it, you got to do it really well. Mm-hmm. And here's my thing. So Marcel and I have the same opinion on this. We are the only two people apparently on this planet that are lukewarm on this. People either really love the Prelude trilogy or they hate it.
Really hate it.
Really hate it. I mean, yeah. it got me nervous going on here. I mean, Noah left the podcast. So,
yeah.
You know, which I'm kind of thankful he didn't read this, because he would have complained the whole time.
Yeah.
And we already have weird Stephen King books that he can complain about. I don't need to torture him further.
That's right.
By reading an author he really doesn't like.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I can see why a lot of people find this book to be problematic. And I can also see like the good things about it too, right? I think
are really fun moments.
Yeah.
I think probably the most fun this gets is when Leto and his buddy are on the boat and the boat catches fire.
Romber?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's Duke Vernius's son.
Yeah. They're going out on a boat to catch pearls, like these pearl type things on Caladan, yeah. And then the boat catches fire. That's a fun sequence.
They have to get saved.
That felt like something out of Jedi Academy.
It did. Yeah, a cross between that and Young Jedi Knights. It's like something you read in those books.
Yeah. If they had talked to the fish, then, you know, like, was Jason here? But anyway, I honestly give this a 3 out of 5.
Yeah, that's what I rated it.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't know how the other two are going to stack up in this trilogy, but we'll find out eventually.
Yeah, I guess up next is House Harkonnen.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what the Harkonnens do this time. I don't know.
I don't know how it's the same length as this book. It's like almost 700 pages.
Why?
I
don't know. Anyway,
we'll find out.
That's all we have.
Yeah.
So, well, I think we'll call it there.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good one, everyone. Join us next time. And remember, walk without rhythm so you don't attract the worm. Goodbye.